Thank you, Casey. Good evening, everybody. I'd like to call this meeting to order on August 16th, special session of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board at 6 p.m. All right, so if I could please have the roll call, Casey.
Vice Chair Coyle.
Here.
Board Member Horvath.
Here.
Board Member Mintart.
Here.
Board Member Landau. Board Member Odell.
Here.
Board Member Wood.
Here.
And Chair Clark.
Here. Thank you very much, Casey. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll move on to the next item, the call to the audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the board on any issue not listed on today's agenda pursuant to Arizona Open Meeting Law. Individual board members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. However, the board may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during the call to audience. In order to speak during call to audience, please specify that you wish to discuss when completing a blue card. So, Mr. Loomis, I have two cards for you.
Yep. So, one for each.
One for each, all right. Mr. Loomis, you may please approach the table and address the board.
Thank you. Good evening, Chairman and members. I'm Paul Loomis, and I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I just have several questions for you. One is, why a special session? I thought that the agenda should identify the reason to have a special session as part of the agenda. Also, your website does not identify when the regular scheduled meetings are. When are your regular scheduled meetings? It doesn't identify that on the website. I searched for that to try and figure it out. That's the first question. The second question is, are these meetings being broadcast live, or is the video just available after the meeting when it is posted on the website? I thought council directed that they be live when possible, and is this true? Council chambers are available tonight, so it could have been broadcast live if that's possible. And then I'll hold my third question for item five. Thank you. And hopefully Byron will stick around for that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Loomis. All right. We'll go ahead and move on to the next agenda item. All righty. Item number one, presentation and discussion regarding potential town code amendments to private recreation area, amenity in lieu of fee opportunities, and other related requirements for residential subdivisions, multifamily projects, and mixed-use developments. All right. And do I turn the time over to Christy?
So Hannah Oden is...
Hannah Oden.
Yep. Is,
oh, there it is. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
All right, thank you. My name is Hannah Oden, and I'm a senior planner with the town. Should I go ahead and start mm-hmm. the presentation? Okay, great. Can everyone hear me? Is I'm okay sitting, or I can stand?
Sounds fine.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like we're okay here. All right, so thank you for the opportunity to present tonight about potential zoning code changes in regards to the town's recreation standards. So I really want to start off by really identifying the focus that we're focusing on private recreation areas in this presentation and with these amendments. So that's probably pretty different than what you usually deal with CRAB. So they're not public parks, they're private parks. So just an example to just kind of give you a visual. It's on the screen here. This is just a neighborhood park associated with a newer subdivision. So that's what we're going to be focusing and talking about tonight. So really, why we're here, it stems from the Oro Valley Parks and Recreation Needs Assessment and Master Plan, which I'm sure you're all very familiar with. So a key finding from those studies and those reports was that there is a need for larger parks in Oro Valley. There's a lot of mini parks, so those are defined in the needs assessment as those smaller than 3 acres, but there is a need for larger recreation spaces. So with those findings, Town Council did adopt an objective in the strategic leadership plan. guiding document for the town, which is based on the goals and policies of the general plan. I mean, council adopts the SLP. So the actual objective is in italics on the screen, but essentially it was a directive for staff to look at potential changes to the zoning code to prioritize larger neighborhood area parks and residential subdivisions and amenities based on the parks and recreation needs assessment. So as planning staff, our charge was to look at the zoning code and recommend potential revisions, look to where those would make sense, more appropriate to meet this SLP objective, again, for private parks. So tonight I'm going to be discussing some key findings and solutions and recommendations that we found based on research and looking at the existing code standards to meet the SLP objective. So tonight this is presented for discussion and feedback. There's no action being taken, and we're really looking forward to any feedback from CRAB as far as our recommendations moving forward. Those will ultimately help inform the actual code drafting. So where we are in the overall process is we've already done a lot of research, both in our own zoning code and own town standards and across Arizona and other jurisdictions. Of key issues and potential solutions. So those would be the recommendations. So tonight we are here, CRAB with the big yellow star there, to get feedback on those recommendations. Next month we're going to be having a similar conversation with the Planning and Zoning Commission to get feedback on the recommendations, which will then inform code drafting, which would be the step after that. So that's when we're actually going to tweak the language of the zoning code as far as the recommendation. So that's when the actual language will be formed during the code drafting stage. We'll then be back to present those actual code changes to CRAB. And after that, we'll present them, after there's a recommendation from CRAB to the commission, we'll present those changes to the Planning and Zoning Commission, and the amendments will ultimately be presented to Town Council for consideration. So here's just a slide just showing the research that we've done and what we looked at. So we, of course, looked at our own Oro Valley zoning code to look at maybe things that are working well, areas where they're deficient and there could be potential improvements to meet the SLP objective. Of course, looked at the parks and needs assessment and master plan, because basically this did stem from the findings of those documents. And we also looked at private recreation area size and amenity requirements throughout Arizona, as well as an amenity inventory. So that's both in Oro Valley and other Arizona jurisdictions, looking at the amenities that are actually provided on the ground, what's actually built in these parks. So there's a whole list, including Oro Valley, of the jurisdictions that we got information from. Trust for Public Land was another resource for looking at the best practices for accessibility. And also we had discussion and had feedback both from Pros Consulting, which was the consulting firm that put together the master plan, and of course the Parks and Rec Director, who's Diaz Trahan. So we had conversations about our recommendations. So there's four key findings. We'll be going through all of them in more detail in the following slides. And I will be stopping after each finding to have a discussion. I can answer questions or clarify anything. I mean, of course, we'd really love to hear from all of you about what your take on the recommendations, your questions, or think they could be different. We'd love to hear that so we can use that information moving forward. But the first finding has to do with the consolidation of private recreation spaces and looking at where there's opportunities for that to create larger parks. The second finding has to do with minimum recreation area size. The third finding is actually required private recreation area size compared to other Arizona jurisdictions and where we're at currently as a town. And the fourth finding has to do with amenity requirements. So the first finding, again, has to do with consolidation of private recreation spaces. And so what we found just looking for a zoning code is there really is no mechanism to consolidate park areas and subdivisions. So sometimes this can lead to smaller and more scattered parks. So an example of this, is this image here, this black and white site plan. So this is the villages at Silverhawk subdivision on Tangerine and First Avenue. And so you can see the four yellow stars on there. So it's a pretty big subdivision, but the recreation areas are actually split between four different areas. So this developed in three phases, so they're scattered throughout the phases, but this would be an example. Instead of having one larger consolidated recreation area, they could be scattered and smaller. So our proposed standards and our recommendations to create larger private recreation spaces. The first recommendation is to have a requirement to consolidate private recreation areas unless there's specific circumstances or special circumstances where they need to be split up. So our actual recommendation is that a recreation area cannot be split up more than twice without the developer having to demonstrate special circumstances. So that would be anything from like topography or access issues. So no more than twice is our recommendation to really consolidate those parks and promote larger recreation spaces. The next recommendation is that new subdivisions, when they develop adjacent to each other, that they actually share a recreation space. So for instance, if you have two developments, maybe each one has like a half acre recreation area requirement. Instead of having those separate and serving those individual subdivisions, there would be 1 acre that's shared between the two. So you would end up with a larger private recreation area. An example of where this was done is over on the far right side of the screen. So this is the Altera and Valley Vista subdivision, east of Rancho Vistoso along the new Moore Loop Road connection. If you can see it outlined and circled in blue, right here, that's a shared recreation space between the two subdivisions. That's just an example of what that might look like. And finally, just to ensure that all residents have sufficient access to these parks, our recommendation is that all recreation areas should be no more than about a half mile or 10-minute walk for all residents. So that would mean, you know, park can't be situated, you know, maybe to one corner of a subdivision where it's too far for most people to get to without hopping in their car. Our goal with this was just to make sure that these recreation areas are accessible and that people can, you know, walk, bike, or use other methods of transportation other than needing to jump in their vehicle. So that wraps up the first finding. Was there any questions or feedback?
How do you define adjacent? I mean, I know what I have in my mind, what adjacent means. What are two adjacent subdivisions? How far apart do they got to touch? I've looked at the recommended language in here. I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So in this case, the property lines of those developments do touch. So that would be what we were looking at. They're basically next to each other. But, you know, when we drop the code, we'll definitely make that more clear. Do you have maybe a recommendation or a thought as far as...
I just saw that being a question that jumped out at me when I was reading this the other night. So, I mean, if a wash runs between it, are they touching?
If I may help a little there, sorry to introduce myself. I'm Byer Bello, planning manager. I'm looking at panel on this project. So the zoning code has two, this is a great question, has two specific definitions, the word adjacent and the word abutting. So abutting would mean they touch property lines. So using the word adjacent is very specific. It means if there's a wash between the two, or there's a road between the two, there's a hill, that means adjacent. Okay, they are adjacent, but they're not abutting. So they're two distinct terms. So we never want to be in a circumstance where, yeah, a road splits a subdivision, and therefore, you know, they should need to share. Because that's what you have here. You know, you have a road between these two subdivisions. So the word adjacent is very intentional, and we make sure that's reflected in the contract.
Madam Chair? You'll find I ask a lot of questions. As a follow-up on members' question, the adjacent subdivisions, does it mean within the same developer, yes or no?
No, it does not have
to be. So we would be asking different developers
to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's
the question whether that's economically feasible.
If Madam and Pulte, for example, of this.
Yeah. Right. I'm just commenting, you know, in terms of the number one thing of Ore Valley is to encourage development of these type of homes. Does it make it more difficult? Yes, for comment. If you're going to require different developers that have different principles to automatically work together, and I'm driven there by financial considerations. Just a comment. And then the consolidation of private recreation areas, same question. Is that within the same developer?
Yeah, so that so for that recommendation, we'd be looking at like similar to the villages at Silverhawk, the Black and White. So that's the same subdivision, same developer.
Okay.
But consolidating within that subdivision to be splitting up no more than twice.
Well, and that's good too, because hoping to get two developers to work together might be rather difficult. two more. In the agenda description, it says amendments to park rec area amenities in lieu of fee opportunities. So we're basically considering that the town would require what type of amenities in lieu of collecting a fee. Is that a correct interpretation?
So we'll be getting into the in lieu fee options further in the presentation, but
okay.
Essentially it's a fee to the town in lieu of providing a recreation
okay.
area.
And lastly, in terms of the survey areas that we look, I would just continually comment that we should be surveying higher-end communities since we attribute ourselves to be more like Scottsdale than Tucson. Just a comment, if we give more weight to one another. Thanks.
Thank you.
Sorry, one more question. To force the developers not to break it up more than twice, if a large community were to come into Ore Valley, say on the size of like Rancho Vistosa or something, how are you going to be able to guarantee it's only a 10-minute drive, you know, instead of having to, you know, break it up? Because I can see, you know, for instance, I live in Rancho Vistosa, and we have a little park here, a little park there, and it serves our community very well versus this kind of, in my opinion, takes that away.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, in that case, that could qualify as a special circumstance. And if you have such a large subdivision where you split your recreation area into two different places, and it's still more than a 10-minute walk from residents, you know, that could be a special circumstance that we would consider for maybe having a third space so that you have different recreation areas within a 10-minute walk. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So, I don't even know if I can ask this, but was this their idea to put that park together, or was the town tell them that's what they should do?
So I believe, and I can defer to Beyer for that, I believe it was part of the original Rancho Vistoso master.
The town actually acquired this.
Okay.
So that was part of the rezoning effort that they consolidate and work together. And
okay.
And it worked out in negotiating with, first up in the north, Pulte hadn't even bought the property itself.
Yeah.
So the way we had arranged in terms of timing, because you're right, it can be a trick, is one developer took on half the park, drew a line through the park, they provided the amenities after a master plan was created for both sides. And so the next developer, when they built Pulte in the south, then they had to build the remaining. So the timing was set up based on development of the subdivisions. But the idea was set up in advance as part of the rezoning requirement. So, yeah.
Any other questions, members? No? All right, please move on.
Yeah, thank you all very much for the questions and the feedback. It's much appreciated. All right, so moving on to the second funding, which has to do basically parks, maybe some minimum size of parks before there's an ALUE fee. So an ALUE fee requirement. So I'll start with kind of the research that we did that our finding was based off of and our recommendations. So we actually got a list of all the mini parks that were included in the needs assessment. We went through all of those parks in Oro Valley, both with aerial images and Google Street View, to see what actual amenities were provided in all of those parks. So we did do an inventory, and we also looked at some other Arizona jurisdictions like Flagstaff, Marana was in there as well, just to see what parks of different sizes, what amenities were actually built. And so what we found is that private parks that are smaller than a quarter of an acre do have low recreational value compared to your larger parks. So kind of an example of this, if you look on the top image here, on the right side of the slide, this is a park that's just, it's a little less than half, or, sorry, a little less than a quarter of an acre. And really what's provided there, are just a few putting greens. So there's not a whole lot of recreational value there. There could have been other amenities provided there, but just based on size, really it's your larger parks that are going to have, there's just going to be more space for amenities. So an example of a park that's just over a quarter of an acre is down here. So actually there's kind of a lot going on. There's a half basketball court, a turf area, shaded playground, pomada, there's even a little putting green. So you can just kind of compare the two. So we do have some recommendations related to in-lieu fees based on the minimum park size. So what we're recommending is that parks smaller than a quarter of an acre must pay an in-lieu fee to the town, and that would support public parks. And what an in-lieu fee is, so instead of basically a developer putting a private recreation area within their development, instead, based on the cost of the land and the cost of the amenities, they would actually give that money to the town. And that would be used for to either build new public parks or enhance existing public parks, so those would go back to the community. And again, that was just based on parks that are smaller than a quarter of an acre. They must opt into that just because there's less recreational value with those smaller parks. The second recommendation is that private parks that are larger than a quarter of an acre, they must provide their regular recreation area requirement, but there are limited opportunities for them to, or for the developer to request an in-lieu fee option. That is subject to town council approval. And with this option, if a park is greater than a quarter of an acre, one thing that the developer would have to demonstrate is that they're within about a half mile or 2 mile walk to an existing public park. So there would still need to be demonstration that there are recreational opportunities for residents. And overall, this creates more flexibility within the code. Oro Valley currently is pretty restrictive with our in-lieu fee options, so it just provides a better balance and just makes sure, or helps ensure that there's meaningful parks in terms of size. Okay, and that wraps up finding two, so if there's any feedback, questions about that finding, potential recommendations?
I do, a couple of things. So I don't really love this idea of opening up this in-lieu fee for parks that are less than a quarter of an acre, because that seems to me that the developers will just say, oh, well, we'll just pay a little bit and then we can build a house there and make more money. I live by one of these little mini parks, and all that's there is a Ramada and a picnic area, and people are out there using it all the time. They're eating lunch with their families, they're walking their dogs, playing with their kids. There's a place for these. I would much rather live across the street from one of those little guys than another house, personally. And then why not just require the developers to say, why not write into code that a minimum park has to be a quarter of an acre? That just makes sense to me. So, Mr. Cole, you had a question?
Yeah, and it's just a great mind, think of like, I'm a monetarist. I worry about cash flow. I'd change the spin. I'd say if, quarter acre plus, here's the fee, unless there's extenuating circumstances. Below quarter fee, double. I mean, make it a penalty to have a small one. Or some money for Parks and Rec or the town. I don't care where it goes. But it's just a way of considering, because I think really the intent of the town is to encourage larger facilities that have adequate amenities to support the area, mm-hmm. so that it's not just mm-hmm. putting greens, even though I know where that is, and the putting green's nice.
I've seen a number of those mini parks. And
so this example, and an example of this for is a few years ago, there was a very small development. I want to say there were 8 or 10 homes. And so that was really small. And it's an 1 acre per 85. It's 185 A4.
One per 85.
So 1 acre for 85 homes is our code. So scale that down to 10, the amount of space. And so it was right around the corner from Riverfront Park. So that developer took advantage of the in lieu fee because it would have been significantly less than a quarter acre. So that was the example, and I think what we're presenting here is maybe to provide a stronger case, not necessarily in lieu, but to better amenitize. It's that lower level park, they're roughly about the same in terms of size, but the lower level has it's better amenitized. So to provide that option, so there's more valuable recreation in that community. That's the point.
So why wouldn't we do a minimum amenities thing instead of?
I think that's
coming up.
It's in there. Yeah, it's in there.
Provide a little more context about the loopy. Over the years, we got a new fee provision as long as I've worked here, 20 years. The way it works now is that you have to demonstrate that you're in close proximity to the park, and it is an option. Surprisingly so, there have been very, 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 very few developers that have actually used it. So, you know, this isn't off the top of my head. I think it's been used maybe once every 3-4 years we've seen it. Most, certainly not all, developers have the approach of, if I have to pay all the money for an in-lieu fee, which means value of developed land as part of the cost, plus all the amenities, I'm better off putting those amenities in and able to make my subdivision more attractive and sell lots at a higher rate. But that's not my supposition. I can directly told by multiple developers who considered in the fee. At first they scratched their heads, just like you did. Well, maybe it's easier, and then when they penciled out how much an in the fee is, they reversed course and said, no, I don't want to be a part of this. But it does occur. It does occur. The reason that we really, for better or for worse, these are all value statements, so you're as far as whether or not, how small is too small, how large is large. Some jurisdictions are all in on loo fees. They don't want to see private parks. They want to see all the loo fees to go to the private parks. We are on the opposite of the spectrum in terms of the way our code is set up, the way our words are set up, for better or for worse, is we really don't want to see them in these unless they're next to a park and who's on us unless they're right next to an existing public park. So with that, Parks and Rec Master Plan recommendation was actually, and talked to the consultant, was to really, we needed to raise and go more toward this in the loopy idea so you can use monies toward public parks and more consolidation because you have too many little micro parks in there. I personally agree with you, Chair. These are the small guys. I find value in them personally. So it really is a value statement. What we were thinking amendment, right or wrong, was moving Oro Valley somewhere to the middle. not extreme on the move fees, but not saying no way, we don't want to see any, and that and we looked for a break point, and we came up with a quarter acre by just looking at every single park in our valley to see what pattern, where we see parks with good stuff in terms of the names, the more play structures, and they, it can be really tight, it can fit, but a quarter acre is about that break point. So we're trying to marry those ideas with, you know, as Ms. Diaz-Trian mentioned, you know, the idea of a ratio, 1 per 85, we're keeping it ratio-based because trying to keep the park size scaled to the subdivision. Big subdivision, we need a lot of park, small subdivision, small park. So having a minimum quarter acre ratio, I think, as an outright, you can't go below a quarter acre. I think it would work in most subdivisions, but it's just when you get into those little guys.
And that I can understand. I understand. Like the example that was given next to Riverfront Park, and it was only, 85 houses, I said. I get it. That absolutely makes sense.
Right.
But I would just hate to see developers come in and say, hey, well, I'm just going to pay to get out of this so I don't have to do it, you know.
Yeah.
And these larger, and there are a few of them, I think, that are in the pipeline.
Right.
Right. And so I just hate to see that, and especially now that the Parks and Recreation, we do have that, we get a piece of half cent sales tax now above and beyond what was going to the community center.
Right.
So, I just, the number one, and I made sure to print it out, the number one thing we heard from residents is that they want open space. So more houses doesn't seem like the answer if they can pay to get out of it, the developer. So just my two cents.
By the way, clarification, sir. Are fees one time or reoccurring, continually assessed to the existing
OQA?
So,
in lien fee is a one-time charge.
One-time
charge, and they're done. And that money goes into the budget, parks and recreation.
Do any counties or areas do reoccurring? Like, hey, if you're going to have this, you got to pay $1,000 a year or something?
No.
Okay.
The other thing is that, and I'm on the Vistoso HOA board, we're in the middle of budgeting now.
Yes.
The maintenance on all these little pocket parks, it's amazing how much we spend. And the builder, once they put it in, they're done.
They
can't wait to turn it over to us.
True.
And then it's over. So, I think this makes a lot of sense.
I'm the treasurer.
You too. Crazy.
All right.
Well, thank you very much for your questions and feedback for this meeting. All right, so the next finding has to do with the required.
The required.
Do not let the electricity go out.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
All right. So this has to do with the required recreation area size in new developments. So we looked at both what Oro Valley requires for new subdivisions, which is 1 acre per 85 dwelling units, which is in yellow on that table. And then we looked at what other Arizona jurisdictions require for new developments of their recreation.
Thank you.
active and a passive amenity, but as you can see, there's just not a whole lot going on. So what we are proposing to ensure that, you know, even the... So those are things like ADA access, parking, shaded ramada, seating. So even the smallest parcels, a quarter of an acre ends up the size that that's the smallest park. I mean, even those ones would have, you know, these minimum amenity requirements that would be for all parks. And then basically for our second recommendation, our goal was really to look at the quality of the amenities and really ensure that there's good quality amenities in each new recreation area. So really kind of what we did is we recategorized how the amenities are defined in the code. So our recommendation is that for every half acre of private recreation area, one active amenity and one additional amenity must be provided. So the active amenities are now, or are we recommending that they would be defined as things like basketball courts, pickleball courts, could be a tennis court, swimming pool. So these larger, more meaningful amenities that have a little higher recreational value. An additional amenity would be something smaller, like a small turf area, horseshoe pit, just a standalone play structure like a swing set or something like that. So with every half acre, you'd be getting one of each, essentially. Just an example, this down here at the lower right side of the slide, that's just kind of an aerial imagery, just or an aerial image, just kind of give you an idea of what, you know, type of amenities you might see. This one is actually very well amenitized for its size. We have a half basketball court. This is a shaded play structure, a ramada. So you can just kind of compare the difference between the two.
So before you move on.
Yes.
Because we just went through how much all this stuff costs here not too long ago.
Sure.
A volleyball court, you're going to get a volleyball court in every one of those things because that's just a net and sand versus, you know, a basketball court or pickleball or even the big shaped play structures and the swimming pools. Those are way different dollars involved. I mean, the volleyball court's more like a bocce ball cost.
Got it. Okay.
So.
Well, and just to add to that, yeah, I was thinking along those same lines, and I wonder if we would say to the developer, if you're going to have four parks, one has to be this. We can't have duplicates, you know, so we don't end up with four volleyball courts and
right.
And no basketball court. Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Hannah, a comment, too, having dealt with one of these past years. Swimming pools are a god-awful expense. And we have a world-class aquatic center here in Oro Valley. I would not in any way ever say that word because we don't want to encourage competition. I want everybody to go to our aquatic center. I just removed the word swimming pool.
No.
Because also, if you do it, I mean, what happens, having lived with it once, developers put it in, seems really cool, hey, you got a swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
And it becomes it becomes an oppressive HOA thing to deal with. Mm-hmm. And you're better to deal with it on a large scale. It just becomes a big expense, not a giant one.
No, thank
feedback.
So the language that was sent to us, it says proposed standard. I'm going off what's in the pack that was sent to us. It says for every half acre of recreation area, one active amenity and one additional amenity. Should it say a minimum of one? Because that example right there, there's a couple for each.
Sure, yeah. And developers could certainly put
if I read that and it says one and one, they're going to build a park and put one of each, and that's it. Right?
Sure.
So
I
think the language needs to read that it's at a minimum of one each.
Just the additional ones.
Yeah. I know, right? The second requirement for the amount of, or recommendation for the amount of amenities, that would apply to single family residential subdivisions and multifamily apartment mm-hmm. developments. Were there any other questions or
stuff.
That pretty much wraps it up. This is just a summary of the findings and all the recommendations. I want to thank you all very much for allowing me the opportunity to present tonight and for providing feedback. And if there's any other questions or
feedback. Can you send that slide set to everybody?
I'm happy to do that.
Thank you.
Please, yes, I would like that. I was going to ask the same thing. Thank you. Yeah.
And I would just say, great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you all for the opportunity and for the feedback.
I'm sorry, I got one more question.
Yeah.
So the packet that was sent out to us, under this section in the findings number 4, item number 2, it read, require minimum amenities that include a ramada with seating, a bike rack, ADA accessibility, trash receptacle, and parking. How does that marry with number 1, B1, in section 4? The proposed standard 1 talks about the half acre,
mm-hmm.
one active amenity, one additional amenity.
Right.
Number 2, require minimum amenities that include a ramada with seating, a bike rack,
mm-hmm.
ADA accessibility. Is that 2 proposed standards?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, so there are 2 recommendations. So you'd have minimum amenity requirements, and that looks like it's in the B2. So this would be provided with every recreation area. And then the active and additional amenity here would be in addition to those minimum requirements.
So the ramada is required, is what you're saying?
Correct, yeah, ramada with seating.
Okay. I don't think that was captured, so,
okay.
In your presentation. I just wanted to make sure I was waiting till the end, so.
No,
okay.
Thank you.
All right.
One other thing there for you, Hannah. Going back to the packet, we didn't really address anything in the multifamily residential, and one of the things in here that had me concerned, again, I bring up what Oro Valley residents say they want open space, in the multifamily residential, and forgive me, there's no page numbers, or I would direct you to the page, says that you're recommending going from 35% of the project area must be set aside for open space, down to 17%. I have a problem with that. That's half of what's required.
it's funny. It's a numbers game. At the end of the day, it's the same. Let me explain why. Let me back up even more. So I really want to distinguish between open space and required park space. They're 2 different numbers. So the code requires every subdivision, every commercial development, et cetera, to provide open space that's not a park. So there's an open space requirement. And then what's called an environmental assessment range. And there's a map and the ranges in terms of the amount. So the parks requirement is on top of that. So it's in addition to it. So those 2 terms, sorry to be a wonky person. They're different in our minds, and they're 2 different standards. And so, and then when it comes to the apartment number in terms of parks, right now, I forget what it is, but it's a complete tongue twister. It's 50% or 35% or something like that is the requirement. And every time we read it, every time we explain to a developer, we explain to a neighbor, it's 50%
of
35%.
50%
of
35%. And so that, 50,
yeah.
Right, 50%.
So 17%.
Right.
So,
we're just trying to put it in a simpler way. We're not actually increasing or decreasing the number. That makes sense.
Kind of.
And so 35 would include open space, which would be walkways. Anything that's green, kind of. So you got.
So let's say a commercial shop. No, commercial shop. Say a subdivision is required to do 25% of its space. They can include all of the green areas as part of that number. I'm thinking about. I'm going to correct myself. The rec area can be area is a parking room, to add to the calc, or it's an area, you know, a 10-foot strip between the two buildings. It's got to be a consolidated usable area. So we're working on that very issue with the apartment proposal. The developer wants to do that, and we just let them know that that needs to be appreciated.
So how do we think developers will feel about this?
They'll hate it.
I'm just asking the question.
Yeah, great question. So it is an important question, seriously. So we'll be working with the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association, the FRGB, as well as the EPA. And we really built these recommendations primarily first town residents in mind, but also the development community in mind that, for example, by requiring, it's an issue of fairness and some legal issues if someone with an existing entitlement to build, you're raising their rate for record. That brings in some legal issues that we want to avoid. They bought land with a property right in the building to build. But if you're rezoning, you're asking for more.
That's different. Yeah.
You're asking for more opportunity than you currently have. So that's where you want to apply the hybrid rate. Mm-hmm. You think that's a more equitable way to pursue this. On the in-lieu fee provision, I've heard some concern from the development community about the automatic payment if you're under a quarter of acre, which is counterintuitive. You think, oh, it's easy, they just want to pay. But it goes back to, hey, if I have to pay, I want to put it in my subdivision so I can sell at a higher price or more easily because it's more attractive. So, and I expect when we go to South at MBA, you hear folks that like the idea and really hate the idea. So we're going to be exploring that. Before we come back to you guys, we're going to work on nuts and bolts code when we look at this. Before we come back to you, we will have met with them and got more feedback and certainly can share that feedback. So.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments or anything? All right. Well, seeing none, I think we can move on to our next agenda item.
Thank you, Hannah.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, Hannah.
Good job. Thank you. Chair, board, gentlemen, I really appreciate you spending the time with us. It's helpful.
All right. Move on to the next agenda item number 2, progress update presentation and discussion regarding the Oro Valley $25 million Parks Bond Project, approved by Town Council, resolution number R21-47 on September 22nd, 2021. And I'll turn the time over to you, Christy, when you're ready.
Okay. This one? Oops, this one?
That one, yes.
And then do we have the... PowerPoint. So this will look very familiar as we update, so just some consistencies throughout our presentation. As read, right, we have $25 million. It was passed by Town Council. The projects related to that bond were golf course irrigation replacement, tennis court reconstruction and expansion, and the parking lot reconstruction and expansion. And those were the ones specific to the community center exterior. The golf course irrigation project. So this summer was the Conquistador course. That project is on schedule, on budget. We expect to have the Conquistador course actually open early October timeframe, so that way we can close the Kenyatta to overseed, and then both courses will be back open with 36 by November 1. Okay. So those were bond projects. Last meeting we talked about some of the general or the CIP that were not included in the bond. So some of the CIP projects associated with the golf course also include new greens on the Kenyatta. It was a bent grass, which is very high maintenance and was having some challenges. We've gone back to a Bermuda mix, so that has been done, and it's really the greens are looking great. We're also, through the course of the year, we'll be removing turf around the greens and going back and hydro seeding as part of our irrigated turf reduction plan. And then also the driving range, we'll get a new driving range floor. Instead of it being tiered, it's just going to be flat, but it's going to be larger. So that way we're able to allow for more golfers on there. And then you can kind of move forward and back to allow the turf to re-veg. And then also the driving range floor, that irrigation is included in the irrigation project, but we're also going back and re-vegging that space. So if you're a driving range person, that will be a significant improvement. So, nice. Yeah, absolutely. Next, tennis courts. Again, tennis courts are on schedule, on budget schedule. If you recall, it had been mid-October due to the monsoons. We love the monsoons because we need it, but also it you know impacts construction projects and whatnot. So it's going to be pushed back to late October, which frankly should be fine. We don't have any large tournaments or anything in that regard where it's going to create some challenges. So generally speaking, we're moving forward. Our contractor, CapCon, this is the first time Oro Valley has used them, and they've been terrific. Work product has been very good. The communication has been very good. So, yeah, so they've been a great contractor to work with. And then the parking lot expansion, that will be happening next summer in alignment with the Kenyatta course. So next summer, it's going to be a little challenging finding space out there. We did acquire this parking lot, so that will also be included in the new realignment, and that project will net approximately 40% more parking spaces.
I tell you what, even though those courts are closed, that parking lot is full.
Still.
Yeah.
I was up there the other day, yeah. and it was like a Wednesday morning or something. It was packed.
I
was impressed.
So there's no tennis and half the golf, and it's summer.
Yeah.
So, from the community center side, we'll talk about some of the numbers, but it is. It's still getting a lot of use. The multi-use path connections. There aren't any changes here, with the exception of the the Naranja Drive. So this is planned from La Cañada going east on Naranja to the park entry. Representatives from our streets division, our engineer is working on a federal grant to fund it all the way to first.
Okay, cool.
And so this date might slip, but that's okay, right? In order for us to be able to have that shared use path the entire stretch of there, which would be really awesome, because if you think about, like, if you're in Naranja Park, you can go north up to the Tangerine MUP, across down to the MUP on First, then back down to Naranja to the MUP, so you could do that entire loop on a shared use path or a multi-use path. So that would be really awesome. And then, of course, the Naranja Park expansion. We are moving a lot of dirt out there. We have had meetings with the Tangerine Terrace neighborhood, with representatives from Copper Creek. Most of that is just some of the impact on Musette. You know, we've realigned that, so a bit of a scar in there. So meeting with them, walking through their backyards to look at, you know, the impact. We had a big SUV driving through there to see, you know, what you could see to help us be mindful when we re-veg the space and where we can place trees and whatnot. So we've had some, really good community conversation with that. Skate, bike, park space, we had two community meetings with good feedback. So our designer will be submitting the final design. We'll be working through that, and then that'll go to the contractor to bid out and then put that into the schedule. And then the splash pads, we're working on two designs. Basically, it's the same footprint, essentially the same budget, but two different concepts. I should have that in the next week or two. And then we will push that out for community feedback, very similar to what we did with the JDK Park playground upgrade. We had two concepts, same footprint, same price point, and said, hey, which do you like better? The themes that we're working with are, the first one is sort of like desert flora, fauna, wildlife, so in a splash park. So, you know, you have to be creative-minded for that one. And then the other one we're calling our citrus splash, because Naranja Park, and so just some things that look like a lemon or a lime or an orange, and you know, just that color palette also. So there'll be two very fun things. I can't wait to get them pushed out, and I'll share that with you all before we push it out onto socials, as well as sharing it with our mayor and council. So very excited about that. But one of the things I wanted to bring to your attention, if you don't know already, so let me get out of minimize here. On our webpage, so these little buttons populate based on, you know, popularity. And so the Naranja Park expansion is ends up being here because there's a lot of looks at it. But it's basically our bond page, right?
Yep.
So this is, you know, to Naranja Park. We update this every Monday. So if you want to know what's happening out there, how much dirt we've moved, the type of equipment that's being used, I mean, literally, this is, it's super fun. Why aren't the pictures showing up? Oh, here we go. It just takes a long time.
Yeah.
So here's, this is just our construction zone, but yeah, here you go. So here you can see, you know, this is from the north side looking south, right? So you can see how it's starting to tier up, right, and to layer up.
I know.
And so that was posted on yesterday, right? So the week before, this is what it looked like. And then the week before, you can, it'll drill down. So, you know, Monday evenings when you're at home, click on this to see the progress that's happening there. But that's not all. We're also doing the same thing every Monday, updating on the web page. So here's our community center projects. And so you'll see the same thing. So here's what's happening at the tennis court. So this was a fresh pour here. This is a pour that's cured. And again, so those are the things that are queued up, and it shows some past notes where, because the pours are done at night, overnight, just because it's so hot. And so there's one of them that's super cool, where you see the big crane coming over and the night lights. And again, it provides you with all of that input. And then here, of course, is the, because we're still on the community center project, is some of the work associated with the irrigation project. So hop on here if you have questions. You should be able to at least be mindful if you have, you know, neighbors or other people in the community that are curious as to what's happening, direct them to this webpage. It's got some really great content. And again, we're trying to make moving dirt fun. Right. So let me get out of here. Anything before we go to the next agenda item as it relates to the update for the bond projects? Any questions? Yes.
How did the earth moving contract come in compared to what you guys were guessing?
We are within striking distance based on what our internal cost estimates were going to be.
Mm-hmm. I know they were worried about that.
Sure, yeah, we were worried, and yeah. I think our worry was, you know, we built that into our cost estimates, but again, that was, you know, I'm going to say back in November.
Yeah, before oil prices went through the roof.
Yeah, yeah, but, you know, it's interesting, you know, some things go up, some things go down,
yeah.
And so there's a lot of this. We are working on identifying long lead time items, so as far as the infrastructure, all of the irrigation components, lighting, some of those shade structures, like, you know, we did the upgrade to the playground at JDK Park. I think we had our ribbon cutting maybe in March,
yeah,
sometime like that,
yeah.
Right? And the Ramada that we procured all at the same time isn't coming in until November.
Yeah.
So, you know, so those are just some long lead time products. So we're working on that.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Ann Diaz. We'll move on to agenda item number 3, progress update, presentation and discussion regarding site improvements and master planning process at the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve.
yes, our agenda development attorney wants us to put everything.
No, it's good, right?
Yes, I did.
No, as it should be.
So now you know what to expect. Even if you don't read the packet, you know what to expect, right? So the current projects that we have happening right now at Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve, the site maintenance. So as I mentioned last time, we're working with Brightview Landscape to do the general site maintenance. They're out there 2 to 3 days a week. It's sort of, a lot of it kind of depends on weather, labor, and whatnot. But they've been doing a really good job for us. They've also, in July, mowed down all of the Russian thistle.
Holy cow, that was amazing.
Tumbleweeds.
Like, yeah.
That's a transformation.
And then they did a chemical application. And then they will be doing a second chemical application later this month, early September, and then come back around again late spring. They'll go back and do another mow and then treatment. It'll take a couple years really to get a hold of it, but if we can get them when they're babies, that's not cool to say. You know, when they're only an inch above the ground versus 2 feet, it makes it much easier. So yeah, so they've been terrific to work with. The other piece, we have started the restroom restoration, and I'll show you the next slide just in terms of where the restrooms are. So that project, so there are 3 restroom buildings on the site. Each building has 2 restroom units. When it was golf, one was male, one was female. We're going to change that up. So each restroom building will still have 2 restrooms. They will be gender neutral. One will be, say, a traditional restroom. The other one will be an ADA accessible restroom.
That makes sense.
So this restoration project is sort of a two-phased approach. So phase one is restoring the buildings. Some of them, the entire roof needs to come off.
Yeah,
we have a cactus growing on one.
Yeah.
Right. So, it's been quite interesting. And there's a lift station there. Those restrooms do not have electricity, right, because it was just sort of dawn to dusk. And so that's, you know, another piece of that. Anyway, so restoring them so they're habitable, they meet code, and then getting the traditional restrooms up and open. And our goal is to have that done by the end of September. We're shooting for much earlier, but again, you know, like the monsoons created a delay. There were some bees over there. We got rid of the bees. All of a sudden, they're back. They pulled back the roof, and there are honeycombs.
Oh, gosh.
So, right, so you get rid of one, the next group comes in. So we had the honeycombs removed today. Anyway, so it's just, you know, that's how, sometimes that's how the schedule slips a little bit. But we should have those open here within the next, you know, 30 to 60 days. Then the second phase, we're, you know, working with a designer to get the ADA accessible restrooms designed to code, because those restrooms have curved walls all inside of them, so we need to square them up to ensure that the handrails and everything are appropriate. Oh, sure. Also, the door swing doesn't work, so we have to create a new door swing. But again, that's just work in progress, so we're excited to be able to have that. Yes.
Are they going to be locked?
We are going to, yes, they are. So the park is open from dawn to dusk, and there will be a like a magnet locking mechanism in there that's on a timer. Okay. And so it'll roughly.
So no codes needed.
Right, no code,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We are not in the code business. That's a crazy.
So those are all questions that I've been fielding. So.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, thank you. I'm glad you ask now, so that way you can, when you provide answers, they're, you know,
they're actually accurate.
Armed with them.
Christy, do you have to put a person over there?
You. Do you have to put, like, somebody there?
Is there going to be staff?
Oh, so right now we're not. That's why
that
we hired Brightview.
Okay.
Right, so Brightview is our,
no, I mean,
is our maintenance.
When you get into operations and maintenance, and you own it, and it's running, do you have to put...
that we own it, and we are running it, but we're running it with a contractor in terms of just the O&M, which is, you know, through Brightview. After the master planning is done, depending on, you know, how things are improved and how it's programmed, we'll look at how it's going to be staffed. And then, you know, we'll also have to do an assessment in terms of how much do we pay by Brightview. Does it make sense for us to absorb that, you know,
okay,
or not? Right. So
those
are just
the contractor running it,
mm-hmm,
ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. So we have the contractor. We're contracted with them for a year, for a fiscal year. They started in July. So, you know, that'll be part of the analysis that we need to do. So that's the restroom project. And while we're talking about that, I'll just kind of slide down here. This is just our sort of our numbering system, just so that way when the contractor's like, well, and restroom number 3, we have this issue. Number 2, we have this issue. So, you know, here's the one that's up kind of north. I call this the my north restroom, but it's just probably equal. But this is the one off of Rancho Vistoso Boulevard.
Yep.
7th
tee box.
There you go. Matt is very familiar with this, which is super helpful in conversation, right? This is the one that is near the parking lot that we're using there off of Vistoso Highlands.
Near the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm, near the former clubhouse,
yeah.
Yeah, where the driving range was. And then this down here, let's see if I can move this up a little bit. So here's Hohokam Park, if you're familiar with Rancho Vistoso, and then like there's the school that's right here.
Yeah, the
now.
The school's
mm-hmm,
right there.
So that restroom is down here. So those are the three that, I'll share this with you. Okay. And then to the master planning. So last time we met, you know, an RFP was issued. It closed last Friday, the 12th, I think the 12th. We had 3 submittals, and so the review team is reviewing those submittals, and we'll select one and begin negotiations, and we hope to get going in September on the master planning. So,
how long does that take?
The proposals, most of them are saying that we'll provide a final presentation to council in like April or May. So it's a pretty quick turnaround with some, you know, community engagement and some research, and so you guys will be busy again in that regard. All right. Any more questions related to the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve update? No.
Okay.
All right, moving
right along. Number four, discussion and possible action to cancel the September 20, 2022 regular meeting. I guess I can speak to this one. As you guys know, the National Parks and Recreation Association is having their conference here in Phoenix, and it's exactly those days. So I will be there, Christy will be there, so it doesn't make sense for us to hustle down on that Tuesday to have our meeting, turn around and go back. So I move that we cancel our September 20th, 2022 regular Parks and Recreation Advisory Board meeting. Do I have a second?
I second.
Thank you very much.
I'll be there too.
Very good. All right. I hadn't heard who else was going. So, all right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Looks like the ayes have it. All right. And then on to item number five, discussion and, discussion to identify dates and times for small groups of two or three members of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board at a time to participate in park tours with Director Diaz Trahan. We do have a blue card for Mr. Loomis here. He'd like to speak. He is opposed to this agenda item. Mr. Loomis.
Thank you. And I'm Paul Loomis. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. Thanks to Beyer for staying, and you're in luck having Tobin here tonight. We both have good extensive experience with meetings and how to make them work. Meeting with small groups to avoid the open meeting law is asking for trouble. You've all had your briefings about the purpose of the open meeting law and the consequences of violating them. The law is set up to protect both you as a board and the public. How is the information you get in your small group available? How is debate discussion among members of your small group meeting open? What documentation of the meetings is preserved? How is this information available to the public? Is this transparency? What prevents a member from attending multiple meetings with different members? Or the questions and comments from one meeting are presented to each other group, either by accident or on purpose to provide clarity to the next group? I suggest you consider a special study session, field trips, properly noticed, that would allow you to meet as a group and get the same questions, same information, and discussions all together. The meetings are posted, attended, and documented by staff and available to the public to attend and record. It can be up to the chair whether or not to allow public participation. I believe planning has some experience setting up site visits for councils, commissions, and boards. They have worked out many of these details in the past. It's not easy to comply with the open meeting law, but it is much more efficient to meet as a board, hear all the discussions, add your 10 cents worth, and use the overall experience to help all of you to make of your own mind. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Mr. Loomis. All right. So, as you know, we at our last meeting, we tried to get this done, and we had one scheduled, and then I canceled, and I don't remember why. And you had something come up, and
something small.
So, yeah. And so, unfortunately, we ended up canceling that. And so, the purpose of this originally was to take a tour of our town assets as far as Parks Recreation is concerned for our new members of our board.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I think it's a great idea. It's nice to see it in person rather than just some pictures on a screen. So, what are your thoughts?
So I am still open and available to do that. We can do a weekday for those that are available during the weekday. And then I'm also open and available on a Saturday. I do have some Saturdays that I'm not available because I think most of you know that I coach a club softball team. So a couple Saturdays a month I'm not available, but I will be make myself available to use on those. So I think maybe what might work is I wonder if I put together, and Tobin, you might want to help me here, some dates and times and send those out to the board, and then they can let me know what's available, and then we can fill them that way. Or do we need to identify them here?
Well, you should identify when they are, but it's one of those, do you need to do this tonight, or can you come bring this as an item? Well, you're not going to have a meeting, I'm sorry. You just canceled your next meeting.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
My fault. I was going to say, bring it back next meeting with all the stuff and everybody's happy.
Our next meeting is in November, and so so in kind of on Wednesday night, a non-town council Wednesday night, if an evening was would work, we could do that. That would primarily...
Are you talking about a special session, or you're talking about small groups?
Right now, I'm talking about small groups, unless somebody has something else.
If you're going to do a small group, just so you know, the former mayor is right that the AG's office doesn't like it. But we've had many conversations with them, and they say it's perfectly legal. But you should keep it to two people if you can.
Okay.
And the reason for that is if you get three, and then you guys have a meeting and two of you are absent, now you've broken the open meeting law because three of you are now a majority and have discussed those. Do you see what I'm saying?
I see. Sure.
So that's why they prefer to leave it at two, because you're never going to have a majority with just two people.
Right.
So if you're going to do that, make sure it's only two. It does run into problems just because, I was just informed that we had another group that did small sessions, and one person went to all the small sessions. Well, if you did that, now all of a sudden you've screwed everything up.
Oops.
So I didn't know about that, and I'm not very happy about that, but that's okay. Things happen, right?
I promise I won't come
back. Yeah, so if you're going to do it, please do it only two at a time.
Well,
okay?
And I hate to do it two at a time because that means Chrissy is taking four tours.
So would you prefer a special session? You do have experience on that.
Chair. We've over the last 20 some odd years, we've grown a lot of different ways, and what we've grown into is not doing a study session with effectively a walking public meeting that's open to the public, because it actually creates what we feel is a larger transparency issue, because what inevitably happens is the recorder can't keep up with all the conversations. People split off and start having little discussions here and there, and the person running the tour is constantly having to corral everyone and asking if members of the public there to, wait, can you actually come to a formal meeting and present and do this in a more orderly
way? And I could see people wanting to come on Parks tour.
Yeah. So that's a challenge. So we do split it up in twos, and I just learned something.
I know sometimes you get threes, but you do a very good job on it. You make it clear that if you're going to have three, you better not.
Never, ever, ever allow one person to attend more than one meeting to avoid that issue. And I think it really is incumbent to have faith in everyone to operate in an ethical manner, and that really the discussions, the ask and the reminders to keep the discussions to fact-finding. So, it's not the time and place to go, hey, at our next meeting, maybe we should talk about putting in a new thing over here. So it really is about, so on our site tours, we're out there saying, all right, there's the saguaro that we want to conserve. The new road will be over there, and there'll be five homes over there. And here's the distance between the nearest home. So it is fact-finding, and it's fine to ask questions. But on those tours, you're not, and we really jump on, if anyone starts tipping their hat in terms of how they're going to vote on something, that gets shut down with a click. Because that raises, Mr. Moon, this is correct, that raises the transparency issue. So as long as everyone is very disciplined about keeping it to fact-finding, you should be entirely good. So,
So
have some dates.
Right. So what I was saying is, if in terms of evening availability, the non-council meeting Wednesdays could be doable. We could start maybe say 4 o'clock, and that way we could hit some of the places that aren't, that don't have lighting, and then in the evening we could go to the three parks that do have lighting, and then you could see them being used, and you know, we could walk and talk through there, or you know, a Saturday. Now the weather's starting to get a little bit better. It doesn't have to be, you know, 6 a.m., but we can do that. So if we want to look at, let's sort of take a poll.
So, right, so we should decide if we're going to do, I was thinking 3 tours of 3, 2, and 2, so that makes 7, or 1 all-encompassing tour.
Ultimately, I think it's the council. Excuse
you
me.
Probably, if you're going to do it, please do 3, 2, and 2.
Well, yes, that 3, 2, and 2, that is the option.
If we have to go there.
If we have to just go that way, and or all of us, you know, call it a special study session or whatever. Yes, Joe.
Madam Chair, just curious. I think we're making much ado. I mean, many of us here have been on the tour. Many of us go every time. How many people are going to go again?
I missed it last time, so me.
Anybody else?
I know Antonio wanted to go too.
Yeah, I'll go.
3, 4.
So we have.
So really, we just can need go 2 and 2.
Two and two.
Okay, so we're up to 5. So we're 3 and 2. I've been several times.
You've been. All right.
Just didn't want to waste much time.
Yeah. Oh, I got you.
So
well,
do
when you get the
Wednesdays,
involved,
do Wednesdays work?
Wednesday would be fine for me.
That's fine.
Wednesday after golf?
You'll just make an earlier tea time then. Okay, so I could do September 14th, September 28th, October 12th. Oh, wait, take October 12th out. That's fall break. October 26th.
September 14th, September 28th.
9-14. 9-28 and 10, because there's a council meeting, and 10-26.
You said 10-26?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question is, kind of poll the group. I guess we kind of already did that with Joe. So there's only 5 of us that are interested in going?
I'd like to, but I'm stepping off the board after this year.
Well,
so.
I am too, but I still
want to
go.
And
it was 4. Yeah. He's the 5th.
I thought there was only four.
Just 4.
Just
4.
1, 2, 3.
And Antonia.
Matt, you also?
Yeah.
Who done it? Oh, I missed Joanne.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the 4th, right?
Yeah. Sorry, you missed that somehow.
Well, that's fine.
That's fine.
Mm-hmm. Actually,
you're the 5th.
You're the 5th now.
You're the one that's going to make the 3.
Yeah.
Oh. Jeez, Matt.
Well, yeah, it depends on who can go when.
I can do the 28th.
I
can do the 14th.
Cheryl. Yeah.
I'd do the 14th.
Okay, Matt.
And starts at 4?
4 p.m., yes, early as I could go, anyway.
Yeah.
And where would it start at?
We could...
Honey Bee?
Well, let's identify this, and then we'll talk logistics.
Oh, okay.
Okay, how about that?
Do the
28th.
What was the October one?
26.
26.
Yeah,
that should be
fine.
I can do that one too.
If
you want. I don't know if anybody else
picked
the
28th. So why don't we get in? We'll get in touch with Antonia. Right. So if she can do the 19th or the 26th, then we'll have you on the 26th.
Okay.
That work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Perfect.
So, Christy, to reiterate, the 26th and the 28th.
Okay.
The 14th, the 28th.
The 14th and 28th are September, and the 26th is October.
Okay.
What we can do, we can meet at 4 o'clock. Let's meet at the community center.
Okay.
And then from there, we will likely go to... the preserve, and then we'll swing by Honeybee and then go down to Steampunk. So those are basically the three where we still need daylight hours.
Uh-huh.
The October meeting, we might need to start earlier, just in terms of daylight.
I wouldn't be able to start
okay.
any earlier.
Well, we'll figure that out.
Okay.
Right. And then we'll wrap it up at the three parks that are that have lighting. So Naranja, Riverfront, and James right. D. Free. Sound good?
Sure.
And then we can finish with a walkthrough at the community center. All right, yay, we did it.
And I will talk to Mike Standish.
Okay.
It's blessed by the eternity, right? That's the most important part.
I can do this. I don't know if that does it anymore. I will talk to Mike and make sure you have some cover on that.
Thank you. All right, very good. We'll move on to the next agenda items, our director's report. Turn it right back over to you.
Yeah, thank you. So our summer camp program, our participation this year was stronger than any of the previous years that we've been operating. So we had camps at the community center, at the aquatic center, and Steam Pump Ranch. And so at the community center, over 9 weeks, we served 1,200 kids. Some of that is the same kid because they came each week, but there were 1,200 kids that registered and paid and went through that program. There we also served 58 children with disabilities as part of our ICANN2 program. We implemented the ICANN2 program approximately 6 years ago. Throughout the entire summer, we may have had two children that participated once a week. And so now we had, 58. So that it's come a long way, which is fantastic. And then one of the other fun notables is as a value add, parents can choose to purchase a hot lunch for their kids from the Overlook. And we had 2,500 hot lunches served.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, I saw that and thought that was awesome.
Yeah. So the first week of August, I went upstairs into the kitchen and I'm like, you guys, how does it feel? It feels like a vacation for them, right? Because they're not providing all of those lunches each day. So it was great. The Aquatic Center, the Camp Splash, so that's one that we contract out. We had almost 300 kids there, 297 kids participated in that. We sold 210 family memberships for the summer, which netted out to 610 different individuals for the summer program. The lap lanes, you have to reserve space. We reserved 13,000 lap lanes over the summer, and we certified 45 lifeguards.
That's great.
Yeah. And so all 45 we didn't hire. Some of them went to other jurisdictions, which is fantastic, right? I mean, that's the more lifeguards that are available to provide those services and pools open, the better. So that was a great push. Steam Pump Ranch is the STEM camp, STEAM camp, excuse me. So it's STEM with an A, art. We had 354 campers, and so to put that in perspective, the first year that we started the camp at Steam Pump Ranch, that's outside. We do utilize one of the indoor buildings, but most of the programming is outside. We were lucky to get four kids a week, and the curriculum and the work that's been done. So that's one of the camps that also won the APR, Arizona Park and Recreation Association, program of the year a couple years ago. So that was great. And then a couple fun little notables, right? Because you're at the ranch playing in mud. And living in the elements. There were also participating were two rattlesnakes,
yeah.
A king snake, one woodhouse toad, two tarantulas, a banded gecko, and a baby bird. So all of those natural resources also showed up, and the kids had a grand time with that. Administratively, we issued 27 scholarships to 20. I mean, one scholarship per kid. So 27 children received a scholarship, and that netted out equated to $8,100. So another great opportunity, and that is in our world the scholarship program is real money. We have sort of a set aside account for donations, and we do some fundraising for that. Versus a lot of agencies, it's just a lost revenue. That's what it is. So that's real money for the camp. So and that is inclusive of anything we do. So that would include like if you wanted to golf instruction, tennis instruction, week long camp, all of that. So that was a fantastic summer and just fun to see those you know unique pieces of it. As you saw today, the town council strategic leadership plan was one of the items. One of the other items that we're doing is a senior programming task force. I know our vice chair is on that. So they've been at work. They've had a variety of meetings, this task force has. They're putting together a survey that's going to be published via SurveyMonkey, focused on senior programming. They're going to do an open house. The task force report will be presented to you all in November, there will be no action. It's just a report of findings and next steps, and then that report and findings will be presented to council in December. So that'll be exciting, and then you know that'll really good work on a very focused component, so that we're excited about that. And then lastly, some of you know, but some of you may not, so our long-term employee, Lynanne Dellerman Silverthorne, has served Oro Valley for 22 years and 8 months, and she retired. And so her last day was August 5th, so we sent her off with a fond farewell. And we will be actively recruiting that position here shortly. So.
What position?
That was our recreation culture manager, and so kind of oversight of all of our special events, all of our sport field reservations, the Historic Preservation Commission. But we're going to be, you know, we just picked up 200 acres that need to be programmed. Right. Yeah. There's one thing for maintenance, but it also needs to be actively programmed. And I expect that out of our master plan, there's going to be a lot of great things that are going to come out of it. And so we need to looking to make that position description a little more robust. Mm-hmm. So that's what I have.
All right. Well, I just want to say so. I was there when Lynanne, a little bit after she started, worked for her as a staff member in the Parks and Recreation Training when I was in high school, graduated from CDO right down the road there. And the Parks program is just amazing to what it is, what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and so we have really grown, and I'm thrilled to see the direction town's going. So good job.
Yeah.
Thank you, Christy. It's fantastic. So, is there, yes, Matt?
Before I forget. Right after Labor Day, shortly after Labor Day, they're going to go in there and knock down the buildings, the clubhouse and where our office used to be at Vistoso.
Okay.
So I'm sure he's going to cordon off that whole parking area. So you guys might think about...
Okay, go ahead and say what you're going to say.
You might think about...
Yep. You're so much nicer than Joe would have cut you off.
Yeah, like, stop.
Yeah.
We can talk after.
Let's talk after.
Yeah, you might just mention it after.
All right. Well, with that, so I see no further business. I'd like to make a motion to adjourn at 7:38 p.m. May I have a second, please? Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned. We will see you in November.
Thank you.
Casey, what's the next meeting day? November.